St. Mary Magdalene, woman of many sins, who by conversion was blessed by Jesus. Thank you for your witness that Jesus forgives through the miracle of love. You, who already possess eternal happiness in his glorious presence, please intercede for us so that someday we may share in the same everlasting joy. In Christ Jesus. Amen. Amen. St. Gianna Mola. St. Pier Giorgio Frassati. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. I'll hand it over to Liz.
Hi everyone. Happy Valentine's Day to you all. Just to start it off, I'd like for each of you to turn to the prospective person next to you and wish them a happy St. Valentine's Day. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it is my great pleasure to introduce this month's speaker, talking on feminism and femininity. Judy Limbez, a Sydney woman born and raised there. At only 21, she has accomplished a lot. She is the eldest of 8 children and currently studies commerce and behavioural science at Notre Dame University and fashion at TAFE. She spent a year in Kenya after high school to teach children. She is one of the leaders of RISE, which stands for Restoring Integrity and Sexual Ethics. She has given many addresses, one of which was in fact to Tony Abbott. She was featured in the ABC documentary, Whatever, The Science of Teens, in the sex episode. Interviewed on the morning show on Channel 7. She was also interviewed on Triple J's program, The Hack. She co-created a workshop called All You Are, or it seems to be, Allure, that educates teen girls and young women about holistic beauty and modest fashion. She hopes to open up her own fashion shop. Seriously, Judy, you're only 21. Let's give a warm Brisbane welcome to the beautiful Judy Limbez.
Thanks, Liz. Hi, guys. So you probably have noticed the title is somewhat controversial. Why can't a woman like a man? I did not make up that title. Just set it up the screen. I want it to be more simple, but yeah. So I'm just going to lay the cards out on the table. It's about femininity and feminism, clearly. And yeah. So I think that it's a really fantastic topic. This idea of feminism and femininity. People get confused about the two different words and like whether they are opposite and they repel each other, or in fact if they can be complement each other. So basically, in a nutshell, I think that women and men are confused about what women are supposed to do, what they're supposed to be like, what is it to be a woman. Like, there's so many things going on right now, just like, whoa, okay. What is it to be a truly feminine woman, and is it a sin to be a feminist, or something like that? So firstly, I personally think that feminism shouldn't really reject femininity. I think the two should be complementary to each other, but unfortunately, as you probably noticed, in current society it seems like the two are at very opposite ends. To be a feminist, you seem to have to reject everything that is feminine, which is quite ironic, but there you have it. So what I want to talk about is the different types of feminism out there, and then discuss the essence of femininity as well. So it's quite jam-packed. I timed myself, so I'm hoping that it won't go over. So I've divided the talk into 5 sections, so I'll just quickly tell you what they are so you know what to expect, and like, you know, hopefully it won't drag on. So section 1 is the types of feminism. Section 2 is the qualities of femininity. 3 is the philosophy of beauty. 4 is a woman's allure. And 5 is the superwoman dilemma. Yeah, so there's a lot to cover, but we are talking about women here, so price. Okay. The types of feminism. Okay, so feminism has obviously changed throughout the years. If you haven't noticed that, well, I don't know, go do some research. What's called first wave feminism was the suffragettes, so I'm sure you all studied that in history, you know, gaining voting rights, etc., etc., and that was great. But then came second and third wave feminism, and that kind of got a bit more nasty. And You could basically sum it up as the current feminism, which is a large, organized, and politically powerful force, which actually their views aren't even supported by the original feminists in the first place. So, you know, yes. And so, under the second wave feminism comes a few subterms. I'll just quickly run you through them. So there's commodity feminism, where a woman's freedom is measured by consumerism and her liberal individualism. So Marco is basically trying to rip women off by saying, you're being powered, you can spend your money on this, 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 and aren't you liberated? And I'll cover that more in section 3 about that whole thing. Then there's sexualized feminism, where the message is constantly portrayed that women are liberated by dressing in hardly any clothes and being sexually aggressive. And that's particularly targeted at the younger women. Then, obviously, as I just mentioned, is the radical feminist is probably what you would most associate now as feminist, which is a woman's value lies in self-fulfillment, which is fine, but what they define as self-fulfillment is a whole other kettle of fish. So financial success, yeah, but then there's a whole independence from men thing, but not in a healthy kind of way, in a bit of a power play kind of way. And they basically say that choice is the ultimate goal, and that a woman must have unrestricted freedom in sexuality and in all the choices she makes, regardless of whoever else is involved. And so that leads to that choices feminism, which I personally think is such a shame, because it's led to the commodification of pregnancy. And now we have feminists who, even though they're championing rights, what they're really doing is putting themselves before everybody else, such as the unborn, etc. But what I support, I believe, is the true feminism. And this is where the rights of a woman are important, so long as they are not to the detriment of anyone else. I kind of just made that up, but I thought it sounded good. So it's about this, about acknowledging that equality does not have to mean the same, i.e. a rejection of femininity. A woman does not have to imitate men to be considered liberated. And that's something I just don't get with feminists, why they really want to act like men, and don't they see the irony of that? Anyway. This feminism has been encouraged, the good feminism I'm talking about, by author and social commentator Wendy Chalitz, who has written about the Good Girl Revolution, also known as Girls Gone Wild. Great book, if you ever get a chance to read it, read it. So anyway, I propose that we can consider ourselves as true feminists if we value women and desire what is good for them. But I think that because of all this emphasis on our society, on the radical feminist worldview, I think the concepts of femininity as well as masculinity, but that's a whole other talk for someone else to do, are so messed up right now that we need to ask the question, what is it to be truly feminine? And what is being female all about? So this leads into section 2, the qualities of femininity. So I didn't really know the answer to that question about what is it to be truly feminine, so I did some research. And so I'll just share with you some interesting ideas that I believe can help us understand a woman's nature and what she should aspire to. However, I'm not offering like a recipe of how to be the best woman, and you can't put women in a box. However, I'll try. So to begin with a quote by Pope John Paul II, is a woman's objective realities reveal something not just biological about her inner and real form. The body is an outward expression of inequalities. And that really, in a nutshell, and I'll explain why, sums up femininity. Now, Pope John Paul II wrote a great apostolic letter called Mulieris Dignitatem, which is the dignity of women. And Karen Doyle is a woman who has taken that and turned it into a book called The Genius of Womanhood, which is beautiful. And it basically goes through 4 qualities that make up the feminine genius, that is what it is to be feminine, her essence. And I'm just going to read you out a quote, it's kind of long, by Karen Doyle, and then I'm going to go through each of the 4 points that they discuss. So Karen Doyle says, "For so long, some of the things that are particular to the feminine, such as capacity to be emotionally available and attuned to others, have been seen as weak or problematic. You can hear it every time someone talks about women being too emotional. But I found in my postgraduate study of John Paul's philosophical anthropology was that he saw that these capacities were powerfully linked to the receptive and nurturing nature of the whole female person. Rather than being a problem, he saw them as an answer to so many of the problems that face the world." So, what are these four things? The first one is receptivity. So, as women, we are called to mirror God in our own unique way, not identical to men. And the receptivity of a woman is not this passive state, but it's this active receiving of the gift of life and love. And this can be best explained when seen in the relationships between men and women. A man is called to pursue the woman and give of himself to her, and then she, in turn, is able to receive his love and return it as well. And that's clearly expressed in the sexual union. In the active receiving, the woman is called to a deeper gift of self, and in doing so, she discovers herself. But then, in modern society, they encourage women to go on the hunt, and in actual fact, women are not called to do that. We're not called to chase men down, pursue them. We're actually called to be there to receive the gift of love. And I don't know if you know the Song of Songs from the Bible, but there's that little quote that I sometimes read, and it says, "I charge you, daughters of Jerusalem, do not awaken love until it so desires." So sometimes women can be a little bit aggressive in their man hunting, and actually that's really not what we're called to do. Sorry to break it to you if you do that. So point two is sensitivity. So women have the ability to see the deepest needs of the human heart. Some call it intuition or being in touch with others. Whatever you want to call it, women are able to pick up the emotional state of a person without them actually saying anything. Women see and understand the deeper needs and longing of the human heart, and we are called to respond to the needs of others with love. This quality is intimately and profoundly connected with our ability to carry and bear new life. There's kind of a general theme in these 4 points. They all kind of link together. Regardless of whether disability is physically fulfilled in childbirth, the very fact that our bodies are endowed with this capacity naturally predisposes our personality to be attuned to the human person in this particular way. So that's a really important one. And sometimes I personally think it could be seen as a weakness in women, but in actual fact, that's one of our greatest strengths. Receptivity. Second was sensitivity. And the third is generosity. A woman's capacity for generosity and selfless love is truly extraordinary. I'm sure you can all think of examples of your mom or your aunt or whatever doing very generous and selfless acts for you, slash, like, for example, giving birth to you, for starters, things like that. So, this capacity for generosity is profoundly experienced when she gives her body to a new life growing within her. Generosity can be realized by women of all ages, cultures, and in all states of life. It is in the small moments of each day, when a woman would rather choose herself over another, that this quality is most powerfully developed. And Mother Teresa has a nice quote, that is, "We love until it hurts, then there can be no more hurt, only more love." And I lived in Africa for a year, and just to see some of the poverty there, some of the villages, and the moms would often starve themselves, well, not feed themselves properly, in order to give enough food to their children. And, you know, that's something heroic. When you're really hungry, you want to eat. I know from experience. So to be able to be like, food for you, go to someone else, that is takes a massive act of heroism. So yes, that's number three. Number four is maternity. So maternity is tied intimately to the female psyche, and it's our ability to cooperate with God in bringing new life into the world. While some forms of feminism seek to deny the relevance of the female body in relation to a woman's role in society and the family, John Paul II placed enormous emphasis on the importance of the female body as revealing something of the deeper nature of our vocation in life. While many women are called to make a gift of themselves through physical motherhood, it is the calling of every woman to make a gift of herself through spiritual motherhood. Spiritual motherhood means coming alongside and investing in the lives of women through formation, wisdom, support and encouragement, etc. This is true for the married woman, the single woman, the woman who is unable to have her own children, and the woman who is living a vocation of celibacy. And I know I have a lovely friend who's coming a Dominican, and she's gone to the US, And it's amazing because she's one of the most warm and motherly type girls you'd ever meet. So it's expressed in her every bit of her personality. And it's so beautiful because her vocation to celibacy is being fulfilled in that spiritual motherhood. And she's a great role model for all of us. Saint Teresa Benedicta, you might know her as Edith Stein, said that women put giving love and service before all else in terms of feeling fulfilled. Because of our biological capacity to bear another human being within our own body and to feed and nurture that child. She believed that all women, even those who are not biological mothers, are predisposed towards this intimate self-giving to others in need. Women are the guardians of life. In God's plan, it is especially entrusted to us. In turn, men are entrusted with the protection of women and their children. Men have to use their strength to defend and protect women. Unfortunately, this cycle has been significantly destroyed in current society. And I think that it's important to note that when our capacity as women for bearing life is not appreciated, even degraded, as it is now, if women's bodies are treated as nothing special, if birth and human life are all worthless or unimportant, women themselves become devalued. Like, look around, a society that doesn't value the gift of life, doesn't value the precious gift of a woman's body in the right way, and simply uses it as a tool. And this might be a long stretch, you might think it's a long stretch, but I kind of made this link in my head. With abortion and things like contraception, like the pill, drugs women up and all that sort of thing, well, we live in a society that is very, very pro-choice, and it just so happens that women also dress in a really a way that objectifies them. And I think there's a serious link between that, because it's like the woman becomes only this physical being, and her worth, her inner person, her gift of motherhood is completely overlooked, and it all just becomes centered on her physical body and external. And I think that many men no longer revere women as they should as a result. In an Evangelium Vitae, a quote is, "Women first learn and then teach others that human relations are authentic if they are open to accepting the other person. A person who is recognized and loved because of the dignity which comes from being a person and not for other considerations such as intelligence, usefulness, strength, beauty or health." So to sum up this section on femininity, St. Jose Maria said, "Women have special characteristics. Their gentle warmth and untiring generosity, their love for detail, their quick-wittedness and intuition, their simple and deep piety, their constancy. The beauty of this contribution for which there is no substitute." So, this leads into number three, the philosophy of beauty. And you're probably like, what am I going at here? What am I going to? Well, I think that when you talk about women, it's really important concepts to discuss the essence of beauty and what is beauty, because in case you didn't know, women are actually beautiful. with this workshop, Liz mentioned it before, Allure, that we do, we talk about the philosophy of beauty, and I give a little bit of a short presentation on that. So I've just taken some of those notes, and I'm going to just share with you some points that I make, because I think it's directly and completely related to femininity and the way a woman views herself. So it's very important. So how is it relevant to women? Well, God has bestowed the gift of beauty upon women, and by their very nature, women encompass beauty. All the research I've done for Allure on the philosophy of beauty, they always talk about women, always, always. All their examples, sorry, they don't really talk about men that much. That's okay, men are beautiful. And even, I think, marketers, you probably know this like statistic already, but marketers will use women 90% of the time because they know that not only will men look at the abnormal, but the women look at the abnormal too, because they're drawn to that beauty. But unfortunately, we live in a culture that sends women a very confusing message about beauty, and particularly their beauty. So first of all, society tells women they need to make themselves beautiful with products, etc. So most of us women actually don't even realise that they already are beautiful, and that is really sad. And I mean, obviously the companies wouldn't make any money if we thought we were beautiful, so we wouldn't buy that stuff. So it's on their best interest to tell us that we're beautiful. And okay, so when you talk about the philosophy of beauty, there are two main strands of thought out there. One is the relativist and one is relationist. The relationist view is that beauty lies in an object itself, and that the object itself has something of value and causes pleasure. The relativist view is that beauty is created by the subject. It's the whole, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, you know that expression? That's the relativist. And the delight and pleasure depends on our desire for it. So what does that talk to you, Amy? Well, when you look at these two views, it kind of reflects the way women can be seen in society. Now, first of all, we have a woman as a subject. So that is the beautiful woman, which has value in herself, the who, the identity, she has a personhood. She is whole and united, she is more than the physical aspects, and her physical beauty draws us to the integral beauty of her person. Physical beauty should be a sign of her interior beauty. It should reveal a harmony between the beauty of the exterior and the interior. Woman as subject is attractive and even warmer up close because of the depth of her whole person. So that's woman as subject. This is compared to woman as object, which is a woman valued only for the pleasure it gives to the person viewing, the what, the thing. There is no value for this woman. There is no value for the person behind the image. And I think that pornography is an extreme example of this, where literally a person is turned into a product to be consumed. And this, our society is rampant with this mentality, and we have literally objectified women, and they're there to be used as tools, basically. So, I think that women have a lot of re-educating to do because of kind of being brainwashed to some degree. I certainly was growing up in Sydney, bombarded with media left, right, centre, and women and, you know, all those glossy magazines, and it's been really hard to understand our beauty in the right context and therefore use it in the right way. So just quickly, the qualities of beauty are clarity, completeness and harmony, as well as perfection. Now the reason I'm mentioning this is because women get a little bit confused at the concept of beauty, and they think that to be beautiful means flawless, but beauty actually isn't flawless, it's perfect. And you're probably like, what's the difference? Well, there's a massive difference, actually. Now that you ask. It is perfection that corresponds to your nature. Therefore, the essence of beauty is perfection according to our nature. And that means our nature is what God, made us as. So you are perfectly beautiful when you are what God made you, / who you are. That's you at your best. But women get this really confused because they think that beauty equals flawlessness and perfection, and that's where plastic surgery, etc. comes in. And women take it to the extreme because they actually misunderstand this concept. But I don't know, if you see like a flower or a sunset or something beautiful, it's not like perfect. It might have random streaks of colour in it, or the flower might have some specks or a bit of, leaf or ripped off it, but it's still beautiful. It's its essence. It's not perfect. It's not like flawless. So I think that's where women get a bit confused with this idea of plastic surgery, etc. I mean, the extremes are ridiculous. I just read like a few days ago in the newspaper, this 20-year-old girl died because of a silicone injection somewhere I won't mention. But I'm just like, what? And she was with a group of girlfriends. They all saved up to get this procedure. And I'm just like, this is ridiculous. Like, 20-year-old doing that and then she dies for the sake of being flawless, it's just ridiculous. Anyway, moving right along. Beauty is a good thing, but the truly feminine woman has a holistic approach and embraces herself and doesn't give into body hate or drastic procedures. So when I was in high school, I definitely gave into body hate and would do the weird dieting things and felt really insecure about my appearance. And it's taken a long, long time to actually develop that security. And I think that many women probably have a similar experience. I'm not saying that to dress up and do our hair and wearing makeup is sinful or anything. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm not saying, be a slob and like have a I don't give a stuff look. That's kind of gross. But it's about finding the right balance and appreciating what God has given us. So this leads on to section 4. So there's 5 sections, remember, everyone? Don't freak out. So this leads into a woman's allure. So this section is directly, the reason I went on that rant about beauty is because this is kind of linked to a woman's femininity. as you will soon see. So, with all this misunderstanding of our beauty and what femininity is, it's no wonder that women dress in fashions that display themselves as a collection of body parts. And I know John talked about modesty like a few months ago, so I'm not going to go on a yarn about that, talk about forever, but I'm just going to say a few things about the psychology behind this whole thing. So, when girls turn into women, they pretty much figure out quite quickly that guys find them attractive, and they often get quite excited by all this attention. And there's certainly nothing wrong with wanting to be attractive, but women these days have become way, way, way too focused on showing themselves off in a physical sense, and this encourages the guys to focus on that too. And when I was younger, I saw myself, my womanliness, purely from this image-focused point of view, because that was what I was taught in all the magazines and the TV shows. But what I was doing was misusing my image and giving it to vanity, which is heavily encouraged by all the societal pressures, and making beauty an end in itself, and wanting to attract others for the wrong reasons, such as self-glory. So attraction for the sake of attraction, or attraction for the sake of that is wrong, and that's not the real use of our beauty. And it's the same thing as guys whose their sexual desires are good. A guy's sexual desire is very good, but when it becomes their focus and they want pleasure for the sake of pleasure, that is where it becomes wrong, because it becomes an end in itself, or a means to something else. So, a truly feminine woman uses her beauty to elevate others and lead them closer to God, not drag them down through competitiveness and jealousy in other girls or lust in the guys. So, what all this focus on women's body does and how hot she is, etc., etc., it has led to objectification. And this is where a woman is portrayed and only valued for her sexiness. And I read this study in Princeton University, and basically this woman attached electrodes to all these guys' brains. I don't know if you've heard of this study before. I'm saying it again. And basically, when these images are flashed across the screen, like different objects, they also showed images of girls like in the Playboy magazine, whatever, and little skimpy garments. And the parts in the brain that lit up in the guys is the same part that is used for DIY tools, so like hammers and drills and things like that. So they literally objectify women. I don't think women often understand that, but sometimes they actually process images like that. And look, that, by the way, is a stereotype of guys that probably aren't the most wholesome polished guys out there, but those images were the sort of ones in naughty men's magazines, and that's how the guys process them. And I think quite a few girls would be like, what the hell? Like, well, that's just weird, but that's reality. And this whole objectification thing is really serious, because it sends a message that women only have physical elements to offer to the world. And unfortunately, it's just not the many men out there who believe that, but it's the women themselves. And they objectify themselves, by the way they dress, the way they act. It's a twofold thing. It's not just about big bad men out there. So, this whole objectification thing leads to a preoccupation with image and can lead to low self-esteem, insecurity, eating disorders, you name it. And I'm sure you all know those girls who act like these exhibitionists parading around, and then you pull away a few layers and they're a complete basket case underneath, who's the most insecure person you've ever met. Like, I'm sure you can all think of some girls like that. And in fact, RISE, an organization that I'm part of, we want to combat this kind of thing by going into high schools and talk about this sexualization and give them an alternative message. So, by the way, if you want to talk to me after about that, that's cool. I need volunteers. That was a very non-subtle plug. Okay, moving right along. Of course, all women want to be considered beautiful, at least to some degree, but because we're bombarded with this media focusing on our appearance, we forget that being beautiful is not the end in itself. So, the way we dress, for example. At the end of the day, women actually want to be beautiful for a reason. Like, let's have a pause here. Wow, what could that be? Well, it is because we want to attract, and what we want to attract is love. So women want love. They don't just want admiration. They might think they do for a while, but the deepest desire of our heart is to be loved. But unfortunately, many women shoot themselves in the foot as they don't dress or act or do anything in a way that would draw love, only attention or even worse, lust. So a relevant quote from the Genius of Woman book by that Karen Doyle that I mentioned before is, the deepest cry of a woman's heart is, am I beautiful? The answer must come from God first. Only then can woman approach a man from a position of inner strength and security. So I think that this true understanding of beauty will help us see ourselves with more reverence as women and dress in a way that conveys our femininity, not just sexiness. And the Catechism actually says, modesty protects the intimate centre of the person. It means refusing to reveal what should remain hidden. So modesty actually protects the mystery that is within a woman's body. And contrary to what society tells us, women inspire and are at their most feminine when they dress and act in a way that shows they know they are more than a collection of body parts, and they know they're worth a way bigger compliment than you look hot. So that personally, anyway, that's not a story. So first and foremost, a woman should dress with dignity in order to honour God. That is what a truly feminine woman should aspire to. He's given us this beautiful body to be admired in the right context, and dressing in a way that shows our body off is going against this plan, is God's plan for us women. So for me to think as I used to, this top looks so good, it's showing off everything, so far I'm wearing it, it basically means I'm giving the satisfaction of my vanity higher importance than protecting a guy from sinning or tempting him or whatever. And I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want a girl to have that attitude around my future husband. That really would help. And a lot of women complain about all men want is like one night stands and they're so sleazy, yada, yada, yada. They just want this immediate physical gratification. Well, I think that the woman equivalent is that we want immediate emotional gratification. So we tally up the looks or the amount of heads we turn in one day or how many guys have a crush on us and how awesome we are because of that. And when really, as Jason Evans says, you should want to turn one guy's heart, not 100 heads. So, to conclude that little section, the way we dress is a symbol of the way we see our femininity, our beauty. Do we represent ourselves as women with inner and outer beauty, or as persons only with outer beauty? So finally, section 5, the superwoman dilemma. Okay, so there's always debates going on in opinion polls, newspaper articles written about what should be the perfect balance between work, life, career, etc., etc., and women. And you're a bad woman if you do this, you're a bad woman if you do that. And so I think that, as a disclaimer, there is no one right way that all women must adhere to. And we all have different talents, lifestyles, burdens. There's no one size fits all. So I think that when it comes to this whole career, family life, etc., the most important thing to remember is we need to judge the rightness of something by what are our priorities and what is our intention. So this doesn't just apply to women, obviously, but I'm talking about women. And I know mothers who are career women, but they work and they have large families and their kids are not neglected. You know, they're fine. I also know women who are stay-at-home mothers and they love their family and their kids are also fine and wonderful. So it depends on the situation. However, in today's society, women are certainly facing this pressure of being super achievers, and so we can get a bit confused about how much we are supposed to take on our plate, and we can get a bit overwhelmed. And I read this magazine interview with Stephanie Kuntz, I don't know how to say her last name, I think that's right, and her new book on the feminine mystique, and it's actually really cool. She goes through all these different like mystiques, and one of them is the hottie mystique, which is young women have to not only achieve in ways never expected before, but they have to be totally, you know, hot, sexy, and desirable as well. Then there's also the motherhood mystique, which is that women have to be constantly there and doing everything for the kids, like the soccer mom, like driving them around everywhere. They have all these extracurricular activities, so the woman goes berserk, taking all these kids to all these different places. And then there is the career mystique, which is a real career, has got to be full-time, all year round, and you have to prove yourself by being the last to leave the office or something drastic like that. And there can be a bit of a clash here, because this career means if you want to climb the ladder when you're young, well, you might also want to start a family when you're young. So there's a massive, like, combustion that the radical feminists kind of, like, make it look all pretty and glossy, but actually in reality it can be very hard to pull off. And I think a lot of women suffer as a result of that. So radical feminists who see motherhood as a big stumbling block on the way to a woman's self-fulfillment, I think they've done immense harm to women by misguiding them along a path that doesn't in the end lead to contentment and joy. There's a term, post-contraceptive regret, a term coined to express the feelings of remorse a large group of women feel for having deliberately rejected the opportunity to be mothers, and then it's too late when they decide they're ready. So they have this post-contraceptive regret. Now, it's certainly not a sin to have a job and be a mother, nor is it a waste of talent to be a stay-at-home mom. I think it's all about finding that balance for what is right for your family. And that's the key. Family comes first. If you want to be a mother or a father, that rule is the first and foremost thing. In marriage, in a family, you come last. It's about self-giving. As a woman, I'll put my husband first, my kids first. It's not just about what I want. That's what a family unit is. It's a group thing. It's not just a me thing. And so I think that the term career can be quite dangerous when women or men use that term, because with this whole putting each other's needs first, etc., I don't think a career should be the number one focus on the hierarchy, and it shouldn't become this outlet for self-glory, like me and my career, and I'm so clever and I'm so wealthy, whatever. So obviously the family needs income, but this shouldn't be the reason either the man or the woman lives and breathes. So, and while women are certainly capable of working and having enriching jobs, and I know women who do so, one cannot overlook the fact that women are biologically bestowed with the responsibility of giving birth and nurturing children. And that's actually not a sexist statement, that's just a reality. So, just as in a man's life, but with particular shades of difference, the home and the family will always and should occupy a central place in the life of a woman. And that's not a lame thing, that's not an old-fashioned thing, that's a beautiful thing. Our family is the most important thing, not our career, or not our job or our social life or anything else. So I think that some feminists can look at stay-at-home moms with disdain, and it's as if time spent on her family was time stolen from the development of personality. But that's the opposite of the truth. There was a newspaper article done by the British Psychological Society, and it talked a bit about career women. It was really interesting, but it found that actually female managers who aren't feminine are less likable and have a smaller chance of getting promoted, and that women with an interactional style of leadership would get ahead quicker than women who act in a stereotypical male way. So for the women who work, this whole culture of imitating the man and doing the man's way is actually to their detriment. To embrace your womanliness in the workplace is a very beneficial thing, and the workforce thrives off both sides of the sexes. Then one of my final points is, with all this going on, all these opportunities women have, they can get a little bit overwhelmed. I know I've suffered from that before. It's, oh, there's so many things I could do, and wow, like, you put too many things on our plate. And I think many women, and probably men as well, struggle with this, putting too much on their plate. So I think that many women can end up completely overwhelmed trying to juggle everything, and they are jaded at how much harder, as I said before, reality it is than the radical feminists make it out to be. So of course at times we wish we could be outstanding in everything, but since this is impossible, believe it or not, if you haven't figured that out yet, you'll be talking after, it leads to confusion and anxiety or even depression, because you can't do 10 things at the same time and do them all well. That's impossible. So I think the solution to all this, what do I do? I'm going crazy trying to be superwoman. I think the solution is we need to search for the true centre of our life. What is it to be a truly feminine woman? Well, we find the centre in God and our genuine interior life with Him. By making Christ the centre of our lives, we discover the meaning of the mission He has entrusted to us. We come to the point of sacrificing willingly not just this, our ideals or anything, but a whole life, giving it, paradoxically, its deepest fulfillment. At the end of the day, as Christians we know, Jesus has taught that only by emptying ourselves will we be truly fulfilled. And since this is the opposite of what many radical feminists promote, to suggest that a woman is fulfilled by giving herself seems sexist or misogynistic. They sneer at the idea of a woman serving or being generous. They see it as the evil of all evils. Yet Jesus himself went to great lengths to show us the beauty and importance of giving ourselves to others, of serving and forgetting oneself. This is the Son of God we're talking about. How quickly could we make it? When it comes to loving God, our neighbours, and finding true joy, Jesus said, I came to be served, but not to serve. Maybe some way around. Something like that. So the tragic irony in a culture that pushes self-fulfillment through self-assertion is the failure to realise that true and lasting fulfillment can only come through a generous spirit that places the needs of others first and seeks to make a gift of oneself in love. I personally know that, like, through my brainwashing experiences in society, it's taken me a very long time to regain this sense of true femininity and not to be insulted at the thought that I should serve or be generous to other people. That's a beautiful thing. So finally, just to conclude, I'm just going to read out two quotes. The first is by Pope John Paul II. Yes, clearly I'm a fan. In transforming culture so that it supports life, women occupy a place in thought and action which is unique and decisive. It depends on them to promote a new feminism which rejects the temptation of imitating models of male domination in order to acknowledge and affirm the true genius of woman in every aspect of the life of society and to overcome all discrimination, violence and exploitation. And finally, we must bring to every struggle undertaken in the name of a new feminism an acute sense not only of woman's rightful place, but of the well-being of others, while wholeheartedly supporting true equality for women in all arenas. We must also attend to the needs of those who are affected by our actions, most especially the needs of children. New feminism must also remember that men are profoundly affected by the path of women's lives. It remembers that true freedom for women respects the dignity of males as well. So, if we are to fully live out our feminine vocation, we can do no better than to turn to Mary, our mother. As women, we must be especially close to her, to look to her in every circumstance, run to her, and pray to her as our dearest mother. If we are close to Mary, she will guide us every step of the way. And finally, to all the women, to be a truly feminine feminist, I made up that combination, remember that you are God's daughter, and he is your origin, your identity, and your destiny.